This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to Jikoji. Those of you near and far, it's wonderful to be together. Here at Jikoji, we had like a week of fog rolling in, you know, just incredibly beautiful fog. And I get up very early, in the early morning. And sometimes in the evening, it didn't happen last night, but it's been beautiful fog. Came up the road, must have seen the golden leaves all over the road. It's a time of change. It's always a time of change. But right now, the shifting, that hush, that autumnal hush is here. And it's a turning. We are clearly in the midst of turning all the time, but we don't always see it. We don't always remember. We don't always look up and see it. But right now it seems wildly obvious. They're in the middle of turning. And not just outside, of course, inside. A little over a week ago, I went down south to my home in Santa Barbara, and Santa Barbara County, to meet a friend that I've had for over 30 years. She was in for an art show. And this is someone who we've seen a lot of life together, births and deaths. We were actually each other labor coaches for children's births, and a lot of life and death, raising children, bearing partners, bearing family, and we walked together through all these years. Bless you. Through many seasons of life. And just a few days before I took that trip, I visited with a Sangha friend here who moved to Europe about a year ago. When she left, she had big, big, profound questions about how to have a fulfilled life, how to live with her own causes and conditions, and be happy. And she's come back to tell me how to do that for herself. It's very, very wonderful to see her. She had this heart full of understanding and insight. And I feel so fortunate to have been allowed to bear witness to that whole arc of journey. And now today, we witness another blossoming and another departure of our beloved Sangha sister and friend, Sokyo, about to fly off into a new life. Transition. I think it's all that we can be sure of is change. All of these intersections with these women have really stirred something in me, something kind of like a koan. I usually share a koan from the classical Chinese tradition, but today it's a person koan. All these comings and goings and intersections. And for me, the heart wakes up with these ways in which we meet each other over and over and over again in each moment. The question, the koan for me is, how do I live a life that is not only mine? It's not just mine. Another way of asking this, Angie Boyce Fenn says in a poem, how can I love so many people? Another way of asking this is, how do we embody the Buddha way? You can take your pick of those three ways of asking the same question. And this is not a philosophical question, mind you. It's not something that arises. The various answers or responses that will arise do not come anywhere but from your gut. That's where they have to come from, in your own authentic practice of your own life. They are not in the mind, but in the center of your being, your response. For me, the response is present when I hear Sokyo laughing. And I go, oh, that's right. This is why I'm here. Or when I hear Etsudo's voice, Masudoan. That's right. This is why I'm here. And when I witness all of your practice, that's right. This is why I'm awake right now, to be with you. Sometimes it's just looking into someone's eyes and recognizing the wonder that we happen to exist and get to share this moment together. It's unbelievable, really. And yet here we are doing just that. I don't think you need any words most of the time to figure out how to love so many people. For me, that response is also engaged and activated when we bear witness to each other's suffering, when we see each other's hardships and know it as our own, when we stand in this bittersweet threshold of comings and goings. To live and embody the Buddha way, to love all these people that we love, strangers and intimates alike, is actually to be entrusted with a life that is not just ours, but everybody's shared existence. All of our lives seem to be braided together so intimately and so endlessly. And when we pay attention, it asks us to be all in. Just give yourself completely over to this life. Let it live you. Not as an escape from difficulty or pain, but as a kind of intimate responsibility for your own experience and the experience of every body in everything that you receive. So I want to say to love people, to truly embody the Buddha way, is to be alive in this body, in this life as it is. And that means all of it. The laughter and the tears, the difficulties and joys. It's kind of a total responsibility for your own experience and ellipsis, everyone else's. These are not your individual lives. It's not my individual life. I know that. That our lives are intersecting all the time. Old friends, new friends, even the trees, the earth, the bugs, the turkeys, intersection, intersection, intersection. And for some of us, this is our vow to be present for those intersections, to wake up in the middle of all those messy intersections and bow. This question of belonging to everything is what's been pulling at my heartstrings. We belong to everything. And I think it arises because we are not individual sparks of light. It's like we're a field of light, like a network of light. Spark, 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 spark. And those lights include our ancestors, all of yours and mine, and our friends. We're not isolated strangers. The sparks include the water and the sky and the leaves and the trees and the turkeys and the scrub jays and the mountain lion that's scratching on a tree and path up there. And the people who've marked their hands on the caves of the cave paintings. They're all here with us. On the drive back from Santa Barbara County, I listened to this song that I'm very fond of. It came on the Spotify mix. I listened to it about 10 times in a row. It's an old, I don't know how many of you know Nina Simone. I hope you do. Thank you. She's one of my favorites. And it's a song called Feeling Good. And I just kept repeat, repeat, repeat. And for the rest of this talk, I'm going to intersperse with some of those lyrics, because they have to do with our shared existence. The song Feeling Good. Here are the first words. Birds flying high. Oh, sun in the sky. You know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I was then listening to that song on the foggy highway coming up here, listening to it over and over and over again, and feeling good. And I still am feeling good. Not because life is perfect. It's not. It's a mess. But because awareness is freedom. And she's talking about freedom. Birds flying high. You know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Awareness, what is that? You know, we talk about it all the time. And my definition of it probably changes from moment to moment, but most of the time there's a thread. And the thread is just being awake to what's actually happening right now, without any ideas about how it corresponds to something that happened yesterday, and without any ideas about what it means for tomorrow. Some of us are really good at pattern recognition, and it's an incredible blessing, and it's an incredible curse. Paying attention to what's here right now without trying to connect it to anything else, just in the moment, without an opinion of it, about it. And then seeing what's here, to choose how we offer our hearts to that moment. When we do that, when we recognize what's here right now, and we offer ourselves fully to it, something kind of revolutionary happens, kind of ordinary, extraordinary, I guess. It just happens without our control. And what happens is we taste freedom, which some of us might call the Buddha way. So what does the Buddha way want from us? To let everything in. Everything. Let it all in. Everything that you experience, let it all in. Take total responsibility for what you experience. You're fabricating it anyway. So what you experience, take total responsibility for that perception, however it comes to you, and then also responsibility for how it comes out of you. And this is what the Buddha taught. The Buddha said this: in reference to the seen, there will only be the seen. In reference to the heard, only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, only the cognized. That is how you should train yourself. When for you there will be only the seen in reference to the seen, only the heard in reference to the heard, only the sensed in reference to the sensed, only the cognized in reference to the cognized, then Bahaya, who he's teaching to. There is no you in connection with that. When there is no you in connection with that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder, nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of stress. In other words, what we give our full attention to, when we give our full attention to what's here, this person that we feel so separate from the rest of it all falls away without any extra effort. And when that falls away, all that is interconnection. And from there, this compassion arises so naturally, you don't have to do anything. In that space, any idea that you're separate from everything and anything else is apparently a fiction. I mean, apparently, so obviously a fiction. Blame dissolves. Because all the causes and conditions are so vastly intertwined. You could say we are what we see, and we see what we are. So there is a famous Spanish philosopher that I just heard on NPR. He's long dead, Jose Ortega y Gasset. And he wrote these words, "Tell me where your attention lies, and I will tell you who you are." That was 50 years after the famous psychologist William James said, "My experience is what I attend to." And those two statements are literally thousands of years after the Buddha said the same thing. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha taught this expressly. All experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. What this means in your daily life and in my daily life, in our shared existence, is what we pay attention to is actually an ethical choice, an ethical force that impacts our shared existence. What we give attention to is actually our life's work, our art. So paying attention is what you did this morning. Paying attention, sitting zazen. You came up here for some reason, I don't know why, to sit zazen, to pay attention to what arose as you sat down in this quiet space and listened to the people around you wiggling and breathing and sneezing. You paid attention. And this is how we train ourselves in this radical kind of presence to our lives just as they are. You are not training in self-improvement. People think that a lot about Zen practice. You're already cooked and you're still cooking. This is not self-improvement. This is self-recognition. And in that recognition, when we meet a friend and we're not sitting zazen, we can practice meeting that friend like we meet ourselves in this wall, completely, through all of our senses. When we meet difficulty in our lives, we can practice meeting difficulty that same way. Just, okay, here it is. It's just a regular, ordinary life, but this is how we can be awake to what it really is. As ordinary as you're breathing in and out, as ordinary as your heart beating, as extraordinary as you're breathing in and out, as extraordinary as your heart beating. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. Last week when I was buying those peonies, I was at Trader Joe's and I was doing that very spiritual encounter with the avocado pile, trying to divine which one is going to be ripe at the right time or is not already brown inside. It's this very interesting spiritual practice I have with that mountain of avocado. And another woman, whom I don't know, was standing there, obviously having the same experience, encountering, meeting the avocado mountain. She was squeezing them. I was squeezing them, trying to just figure out, how can I pick the one that wants to be met, right? That's really what it's doing. And after a while, she glanced over at me and she said, whenever I meet these avocados, I feel like I'm taking a test that I didn't study for. And I said, and the test changes every week. And we laughed and we just kind of giggled to each other about kind of the fertility. The Dharma of the Avocado Mountain. There we are, two strangers pretending that we had some answer to this great mystery of avocado ripeness. Suddenly, these two strangers were co-conspirators in life, just smiling at each other ridiculously broadly, admiring the fact that life does not respond according to our schedule. Avocados may not be where we want them to be when we want them to be. They're pretty reliably not. It's an exercise in great humility. And there it is, paticca samuppada, the Sanskrit way of talking about interdependent origination. Two strangers meeting at the mountain of avocados, and this exquisite uncertainty about ripeness, and completely together. Making that moment together. None of that awareness, that co-awareness of co-origination happened because we were chanting sutras or incredibly well-versed in all of the teaching. It happened because we were both willing to be present in front of a mountain of avocados and trying to figure out how to meet the avocados. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean. Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when the day is done. That's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. So this is the way, I think, the Buddha way, how it reveals itself, if we're willing, through connection, through recognizing that we are not living our own lives like solitary sparks of light. Instead, we're in the field of light. The way reveals itself in front of the avocados, listening to Nina Simone, in our suffering, in our perplexity, in the ambiguity of every moment of the day. And also in this kind of delicate acknowledgement that we're all trying, whoever we are, wherever we are in our lives, to meet what's here. All intertwined, doing our best. And we all have to learn to enjoy this not so subtle irony that awakening doesn't come from cleverness. It doesn't come from an intellectual exercise. It doesn't come from any kind of mastery or expertise. It comes from just being willing to be with your life as it is. And willing to meet everybody else who is your life in any given moment, as they are, where we are, how we. When there is only seeing, hearing, breathing, feeling good in the wide open field of just this, we realize the great matter of life and death. It's not inside us or outside us, it's in the intersections. when we live like that, willing to intersect with whatever's here, kind of choosing connection instead of separation, choosing authenticity instead of sounding right or good, sounding like a Buddhist, none of that. Just choosing to be really connected to what's happening wholeheartedly. We can't help but notice this freedom, this deep freedom being intertwined. We're already breathing it in and out. Stars, when you shine, I feel. Freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Not because life is easy, but because awakening in each moment lets us feel everything. The joy of our sister and brotherhood, the sadness of your departure, the sweetness of the wholeness, this exquisite privilege of getting to be together for as long as we have. And then the responsibility for our shared life feels like love. And our interdependence is intimate. And separation is impossible. So I noticed the years and all the intersections with my old friend Nancy and with one of our students, Nora, and with this one, Sokyo. And I'm grateful that we get to share our lives wherever they are, wherever they take us. We are not visitors in each other's lives. We are each other's lives. We always will be. So I thank you for being part of my life. And all of you too. I thank Nancy and Nora, one of whom isn't a Buddhist and has no idea what I'm talking about, I'm sure. But I think she feels it. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. Every single day. It's a new life. You get to choose. Okay. Sorry, I got so mushy. Okay, your turn. Questions, comments, observations, criticisms. Shane Dove.
Wasn't Nina Simone singing Strange Fruit?
Yes, she did. She wrote Strange Fruit, I think.
So it's interesting that she can express both, you know, what she's persecuted for that and suffered at the same time. She's if I'm saying feeling good.
The whole thing, like us. Her other song that I have played in my life at various times is How It Feels to Be Free. I think I've made that in a Dharma talk as well once before. So if any of you don't know Nina Simone, there's a documentary about her which will make you cry. But if you just listen to her songs, those are two that are wonderful. Yeah, she was, I think, a beautiful mess of a person.
That feeling good is in the the wonderful movie, Perfect Days.
Yes. Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was one of the ones he was playing in his car.
Yeah.
Are you feeling good, Bokushu?
Feeling good. I'm feeling sad for Sokyo's separation from you. And I'm feeling happy that I know her and was with her.
Me too. We're never far from each other. Anyone else? Yes.
Thanks again so much for the.
You can take it up.
So much for the awesome Dharma talk as always. I think all talks are, and everyone's group's been so wonderful. But I think one thing I'm kind of thinking about is I want to kind of weaklessly develop the idea of like doing meditation of Zazen. This is kind of an individual activity, as well as the idea that, like, you know, we're interconnected, because I'm kind of thinking the feeling of, like, I don't know, I'm just gonna make up something, like, you know, your manager shouted at you, right? So how do you sort of, like, I guess, do you want to try to maybe not only just feel how you're feeling, but also how your manager might be feeling, like, sort of like compassion, like, there is that, you notice that thought coming through, might you kind of notice how they're also feeling, and kind of make a connection, or do you just kind of notice what you're feeling?
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a very important question.
Yeah.
I can only speak to my experience, but I don't think I'm alone in this experience, which is that when you practice as you've been practicing, what happens is just what you described. You recognize your own reaction, and then you also kind of cannot help but recognize compassion for the other person. Compassion arises naturally out of compassion for yourself, right? You recognize, oh God, I know what that feels like. I see it coming out of this person, their discomfort in their own bodies. I know what that feels like. And then it's both and. And again, it's, you know, someone's yelling at you and you're thinking, oh my God, they must be feeling really bad. And I'm not liking it much either. Both and. And then you're in this freedom of an opportunity to be skillful in how you want to respond, right? Because you already understand. They're upset, and I can feel this interrelationship with them. Maybe I made an error. Maybe I made a mistake. Maybe there's an opportunity here for me to learn. But what I'm really experiencing also is this other person suffering as my own. I know how that feels. And, you know, if everybody in the world felt each other's, could bear witness, just bear witness, we would not have the problems we have. So if you take that back to Zazen, that's a natural kind of byproduct of sitting practice, is that you have compassion for the array of the people who show up in this wall. They're not all pretty, right? In our ideas about who they are. Like, oh gosh, I'm that, and I'm that, and I'm that, but I'm also that, and that, and that, and I'm also that. And it's like a smorgasbord. Every food of the universe, I might be hungry right now. Every food in the universe is on that table, and they're all you. And you kind of go, oh, okay, that's me. That's why I said it's not a self-improvement. All we're trying to do is meet ourselves as we are and be okay. And when you do that with some real diligence, not pretending, like not looking good as a Buddhist, but actually living in it, you cannot help but have compassion for everybody else, even people who are doing evil in the world. You cannot stop it. Once you're there, it's too late, kind of. You've gone over the waterfall and you're in the pool with everybody. And sure, you shouldn't be a doormat and let people run all over you, but you also understand that they have their causes and conditions, and there's nothing but compassion and taking care. So it's just as you said, you're sitting Zazen, you are sitting down facing, meeting yourself, right? So is everybody else. And that's where you meet in that field. Isn't a you and a them ultimately. But that's not a lesson that you get here. It's a lesson you get here. Through your bum. Sitting down.
Sometimes I kind of also feel this, like, whenever I'm also, like, you know, I'll admit I've also been angry to a lot of people. Like, I can maybe also, as I maybe do Zazen, I can maybe think about how I feel it like that, and then maybe connect. When someone shouts at me, maybe I can connect that experience with that. The two experiences being lived.
Yeah, well, there are some practices where you know, when you're suffering, that you breathe in that experience for the whole world, and then breathe out freedom or love or compassion. There are practices that's, you know, a practice. And it's very helpful to some people. I wouldn't try to force anything, our particular brand or style, that is what arrives, as opposed to trying to do anything with it or convert it. And being with it kind of converts it by itself, you know, just kind of allowing your own experience has some magical properties. I wouldn't call it really magic, because all you're doing is sitting down. You're not adding water or fertilizer or anything, but you are allowing the whole realm of your experience without trying to attach any meaning or do anything to it. Just, okay, I see that. Okay, I see that. And then when someone's yelling at you, you say, okay, I can see this. And it's, so it doesn't have to be this linear direct thing. Like, I'm angry, now I know what anger is, but that will happen by itself. Anybody else?
I posted something in the chat.
Oh, just tell it to me, Akbar, if you could.
It's a long thing.
Uh-oh. Oh, I like it. Can everyone read that? I have to take my glasses off. Look to this day. Oh, Frida's life, the very life of life. Oh, in its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is already a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well-lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Such is the salutation of the dawn. Ah, Akbar, right on. Where did that come from? Unmute and tell me. I can't hear you. You're still muted.
This is an old Sanskrit poem, apparently written by Kalbisa, or I can't, Kalidasa.
Kantidasa?
Kali.
Kalidasa.
Yeah, K-A-L-I-D-A-S-A.
Thank you. Well, Nina Simone and he are singing together somewhere. Okay, anything else?
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.